Hey there, everybody. It is Wednesday, March 21st, 2012, and you are listening to This Show Is So Gay. I'm Ken. As always, you can get in touch with us. Drop us an email and send it on over to Ken at thisshowissogay.com. Stroll on over to thisshowissogay.com to learn all about the fun things happening with our dog and pony little gay show. And of course, go to the Facebook, type in This Show Is So Gay, like us, because we sure as heck like you. Another jam-packed show for you this week. We are ready to welcome our first guest. Hey, first guest, are you ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's do it. Noah Michelson is the editor of Gay Voices at the Huffington Post. Noah received his MFA in poetry from my alma mater, New York University, and his poems have been featured in The New Republic, The Best American Erotic Poetry from 1800 to the Present, and other publications. Before joining the Huffington Post, Noah served as senior editor at Out Magazine, and he's also contributed to Details and served as a commentator for the BBC. Noah Michelson, welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
How the heck are you?
I'm pretty good. That was a mouthful. I'm glad you got through all that.
As soon as you get past the Michelson, it's all downhill from there.
Exactly.
Once we settle that. Now, do you correct a lot of people? I would imagine there's a lot of Michelsons going around.
There is. You know, it depends on the situation. A lot of times I just let it go. I'm not too egotistical. It's not a big deal.
So there's not seething on the inside?
No. I there's bigger fish to fry.
Well, we have so much to talk about. Are you ready, sir?
I'm ready. Hit me.
So many budding journalists write to us, and so you are there working in the media world.
Yeah.
How would you let's do Noah Michelson's Learning Annex? How would you trace your career path?
You know, if you asked me 5 years ago if I would be here, I would say definitely not. As you said, I got my MFA in poetry. So I didn't think I'd have a career in journalism. But then I realized that poetry doesn't really pay the bills at all. So I came out of NYU with a lot of student loans.
You're telling me, man.
Yeah, and, you know, no way to pay them. So I thought, well, I can write poetry, and I feel like I'm kind of a bright person, so maybe I should try this journalism thing. And, you know, my first thought, since I am gay, was, well, maybe Out Magazine. It's in New York. Why not look into that? So I applied for an internship, and I got it. And I just kind of, you know, it's that old American dream sort of thing where I pulled myself up from my bootstraps, and some people left at the right time, and I worked really hard. And, you know, I was working for free, and I started off working 2 or 3 days a week, and pretty soon I was working 5 days a week for free. And so I was doing event coordinating at night and on the weekends to pay the bills. It wasn't a lot of fun working that hard and that much that first year. But
yeah.
Eventually they just offered me a job, and like I said, people kept leaving or moving up, and I was promoted. And yeah.
And then, what was the most fun event that you worked there as an intern?
Oh, my God.
Because I have to tell you, I did an internship at Out Magazine when I was 19 years old.
Oh, my God, that's
and
crazy.
I, of course, thought that meant that I would be writing copy. Turns out, totally not what I was doing.
No, not at all. And that's the thing, too, is that, you know, I started my internship there when I was 29. So all the other interns were, like, 19 and 20 years old, and I felt like this old man. And I felt like such a loser because I thought, you know, all these other people knew exactly what they wanted to do with their lives, and here I am trying to make this career change at such an old age. Well, obviously we both know 29 is not that old. And that's one of the things I would tell people is that if you have something that you want to do or an interest, it's never too late to really kind of go out there and do it. And I learned that just by sort of putting one foot in front of the other and doing it. So I would tell people who are listening who are thinking about they want to get into journalism or anything, it's really not too late. You just kind of have to find your way in.
What about people who want to get into poetry?
Oh, I think everyone should write poetry.
There you go.
Don't go to school for it. Don't pay thousands of dollars to do it. But yeah, I think the world would be a better place if we were all writing poetry.
Now, what is the best American erotic poem from 1800 to the present?
You know, I don't know. Mine is called Valentine, and it's about the F word and how great the F word is.
This is a family gay show,
exactly,
Noah.
Exactly. I'm keeping it clean. But there's lots of great stuff in there. That's another book I'd say people should check out. You know, Anne Sexton and Sylvia Plath and all kinds of great people who kind of got a little raunchy or a little sexy sometime in their life.
Now, at one point, you were sitting in Out Magazine, and
yeah.
I assume that Olive was playing, because that's all that they played when I was there. It was Olive. That's how I got to know Olive.
That's really funny. they weren't playing that anymore. I feel like that's a little bit – that was a little before me, but I can totally picture that, actually.
It was great. It was great. So you're sitting there. Olive is playing, and then Arianna Huffington calls you.
She called me directly and said, get over here. We need you. And I said, I'll be right there.
I love this story.
No. Actually, you know, the way that a lot of things work, I actually had a friend who worked at AOL Huffington Post. And so it was through him that I heard about the job. And I came in and I interviewed. It felt like 1,000 times. And eventually I did have my meeting with Ariana, which was sort of amazing. She's such an amazing woman, and it's kind of strange to actually be sitting 2 feet away from her and talking with her. At one point during my interview, someone came up. They were taking a tour of the office, and they asked her for an autograph and a photo, which was just surreal that I was like, this woman's going to be my boss. But
wow.
Yeah, it's kind of a dream job. I mean, the thing about Huffington Post Gay Voices is that they really were amazing in that they said I could sort of build the page any way I wanted to build it. And, you know, after working in the media, and especially in gay media for 4 years, and really seeing what was possible, then to come to somewhere like the Huffington Post and have that kind of an offer, I just, you know, I jumped at it immediately.
Well, before we get to the Huffington Post, we do need to talk about your time at Out Magazine, because you met some pretty cool people.
Oh, I loved my time at Out Magazine.
Now, the catching up with sections, the need to know sections, and I don't mean to boil it down to Charo, but come on, you got to hang out with Charo.
Charo was so amazing, and I, you know, she's such a sweetheart, and I would say that I probably understood 80% of what she was saying.
Okay, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and one of the warmest women you will ever meet. She had hugs for everybody that she came and into contact with, and funny, self-deprecating, really smart, and I don't think people know that she's one of the most you know, talented players in the world. Like, she gets credited with that. And they just think she's, you know, all boobs and hoochie-coochie, but she's not. She's really, really a talented person. So.
No, I don't mean to boil down your journalism experience to Charo, but I'm sorry. Yeah. It's very exciting.
No, for sure. But that was kind of my beat when I was at Out Magazine, is I was really interested in pop culture, and especially in what we would call the divas. So, yeah, I got to meet incredible people and you know.
Who was the most surprising?
Oh, the most surprising. I don't know. I mean, I got to meet Elizabeth Nomi Malone from Showgirls.
Elizabeth Berkley.
Yeah. I mean, Jesse Spano from Saved by the Bell.
That's all you need.
You know? And she was just really, really sweet, too. She went around and took pictures with everyone and spent like an hour there. But Lucy Lawless is absolutely beautiful in real life. And she came dressed kind of like a bank teller, and still she was just so gorgeous, and I was just in awe of her. You know, I got to spend the weekend with Robin. She played the white party, and that was really cool. I did a feature on her, and so just hanging out backstage at the white party with Robin while there are thousands of gay men in, you know, underwear and angel wings waiting for her, and watching her sort of warm up for that, which is
cool. I love that my comparable Robin experience was going into a store that I never would have gone into this past weekend and almost buying a shirt I never would have bought because Robin was playing in the store.
I think she'd appreciate that.
I think that we really have comparable Robin stories. Mm-hmm. I think they're very much in the same voice. Okay, so then you go to the Huffington Post, and I want to talk about your experience there, because I was reading the opening piece, Welcome to HuffPost Gay Voices section. And I want to ask you some of the questions that it sounds like a lot of people asked you at the time.
Sure.
Why did you decide to call it Gay Voices?
Yeah. I mean, that's probably one of the number one questions that I get, and I still get to this day. That actually wasn't a decision that I got to make. You know, if I had my way, we would have called it Queer Voices.
Okay.
You know, I come from an activist background. I went to McAllister College, which is one of the most liberal schools in America. And so I spent a lot of time involved in activism. And so for me, the word that I use to define myself is queer. And I think it encompasses the quote-unquote community really well, because it leaves room for people to really identify however they need to identify. That's not a word that a lot of people like. Even people who are involved in the LGBT community, mm-hmm. that can be a really scary word, because it's meant really terrible things for a long, long time.
Yeah.
So I'm a big proponent of reclaiming language and taking words that have been used against us and finding the power in them and using them ourselves. Not everyone believes that
Right.
So that's not a word that was really an option. Another option was using LGBT, calling it LGBT voices, and then you just get into the whole thing of, well, why not LGBTQ or
right.
LGBTQITQ?
Right.
You know, and the other problem and advantage of being situated within the Huffington Post and America Online is that, as far as I know, we're the only mainstream news site in the world that has an entire section or channel devoted to queer topics.
Yeah.
That's incredible to me. But because of that, there are a lot of people in the straight world who don't know what LGBT means, and it's not instantly recognizable. So if they're going to come to the page and they're going to see LGBT, they're just not going to know what that means. So we decided that gay, even though it can be very limited and limiting, that's going to be the best choice. I know a lot of trans people, for instance, are not gay.
Right.
They're trans. So they don't identify as gay, and gay voices doesn't mean anything to them. But just for the purposes of trying to pick one title that's going to really speak to as many people and be as instantly recognizable as possible, we felt like gay was the best way to go.
And I really appreciated that you have a line in that opening piece setting things up about the word community.
Yeah.
And problematizing the word community.
For sure. I mean, I think that's another thing that I love and I hate about trying to reach the certain subsection of people is that we're so diverse.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much even infighting amongst ourselves about what we think is the most important thing to get done or about what's, a priority or even about how we feel about things. And so to use the word community, I try not to use it, or I use it in quotes, just because that implies that I think that we're all on board with the same things. And one of the great things is that we're so diverse, and so it's such a rich group of people coming from so many different directions, and I love that.
Now, the other question that you cite in that piece is, why do you need an entire section devoted to that kind of content? And I would like to maybe push that forward a little bit more. Does having the Gay Voices section of the Huffington Post, do LGBT stories then not make it more onto the homepage?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, that's not true. If you look at all the different sections of the Huffington Post, before we even started Gay Voices, they were regularly featuring queer content.
Mm-hmm.
And so they still are. Our politics section, which is so robust and I think does an amazing job, they're always on top of LGBT issues. So if anything, there's more now. There's more content on the front page of Huffington Post because we always have a story up there, and then that doesn't limit other sections having stories up there too that are related to LGBT issues. So I think if anything, there's even more content. Yeah.
Now, for folks who don't know, we should probably back up a step. How does this work? Because this is a conglomerate of all of these different voices. How does it actually work that a piece ends up there on the page?
Well, the thing about the Huffington Post, some people maybe don't know, is that a lot of what we do is called aggregation. So we take stories, we find a story somewhere out in the internet, and we take that story and then we make it our own by taking the best coverage of that story and then sort of rewriting and repackaging it with as many contexts and as many angles as possible. So we're going to give you the most big picture story that you could see. So we have those kind of stories, our aggregated stories, and then we also have original reporting, like mm-hmm. interviews, stories like that. And then we also have our blog section. And that's kind of the bread and butter, I think, of the Huffington Post Gay Voices, is that we have everyone from celebrities like Elton John and Cyndi Lauper to organizations like the Trevor Project or GLAAD, to everyday people who write posts for us talking about topics that are important to the LGBT community. So we've just got such a diverse group of people always featured on the page every single day.
Now, are there any pieces that get submitted where you say, gosh, this is a great idea, but we can't do it, we can't print it?
That rarely happens. If it's a great piece, then we want it to be there. And I'm even about putting up pieces by people or by organizations that I don't agree with. We've reached out to, like, the Log Cabin Republicans and asked them to write something for us, and they haven't taken us up on that yet. But I think what we're really trying to achieve with Gay Voices is that everyone has a voice. And what I really want to see is people having conversations and communicating. And so sometimes that means that we're talking about things that we don't agree with, and that's great because that starts a discussion.
Which brings you to the question of, so what about the conservative voice? You know, the Huffington Post certainly has a reputation for being more on the liberal end of the media spectrum, but there are conservative voices there in
for
the Gay
sure.
Voices section.
Definitely, and that's something that I really want to be there. You know, again, personally, I come from a very liberal background, but in terms of when I'm editing the page, I want everyone's voice to be there. Of course, you know, not everyone's voice is going to be there. If
right.
someone's writing something that's patently offensive or homophobic or racist, then that's not something that we're going to be interested in. But if they can have a smart discussion about an issue and approach it from a conservative point of view, then I say by all means, because I think that also helps to strengthen other people's beliefs in opposition, you know? And so by being challenged, we have a great new feature called Change My Mind,
yeah.
where we take a topic and we ask two different people to write blog posts about it. And then we ask our readers in the beginning to sound off on their opinion of the topic. Then they read both blog posts, and at the end we ask them to vote again and see if their mind has been changed at all. And that's kind of what the Huffington Post, for me, boils down to is trying to get people to think, maybe change their mind, maybe change a friend's mind. You know, I think that that's really exciting.
And there's a lot we say every week, all the drama's going down in the comments section of some of these posts. There's some real full-fledged arguments going on there, but you can tell that it's making people think.
For sure, and that's the other thing, that's a great point, is that, you know, we've got all these bloggers who are everyday people who are sending in things, but we also have just our readers are always talking about what's going on. We've got a thriving Twitter community, a thriving Facebook community, and then the comments section, you know, we can have thousands, five or 8,000 comments about on a story. And granted, some of them are totally idiotic and aren't furthering the conversation.
Those were my comments, Noah, that you just commented on.
No, but, you know, it's the internet, so you do get some trolls, and you do get some people who just aren't there
Absolutely.
To do anything kind of smart. But at the same time, I've seen some amazing kind of conversations play out, and it's really exciting for me to see that.
Now, what I love is on there right now, because I do my little aggregate data of gay news stories for the week, and it's often kind of depressing. And so I really appreciate that right there, you can go on right now and see this Something to Celebrate, 17 of the best LGBT moments. And that's so important that we are taking the time to say, oh, and there are positive things happening.
It really is, right? I mean, that sort of came out of this other series we have called Know Thine Enemy, which was a look, each week we would do a look at sort of the biggest LGBT enemies, because I also think it's really important to know what we're up against.
Right.
But, you know, I thought about it and I thought, we can't just have a negative side to this. We need some balance. And there's a lot of really amazing stuff going on. You know, there was that one week when Prop 8 was overruled, and I think Washington, that same week, Washington got marriage equality.
Yeah. So it was a good week.
It was a great week. And I think, like you said, it's really important for us to remember that while we have a lot up against us, there's also amazing victories happening every single day.
You had the Irish queers protesting New York St. Patrick's Day parade, which is always fun to watch.
I mean, we love it. I like I told you, I come from an activist background. I love a good protest.
Nice.
You know, the glitter bombing, all of that thing, you know, I get behind all that stuff.
Now, it's like we rehearsed this, except, folks, we didn't. We talked about glitter bombing on last week's episode.
Oh, really?
It's a little cringy to me.
Yeah, no, I understand that. And I think a lot of people feel that way. For me personally, I really like the performative nature of it. And I like the fact that it's an event, sort of, and
right.
it makes people talk about things. Like I told you, that's my number one goal, is to get people talking. So,
it's really hard to get out of your clothes.
From a practical standpoint, I think you're right. I hadn't thought of that, Ken. But,
perhaps am not attacking the ideology of it and maybe went more practical, but that's just where my mind went.
I get that. I hear you.
The last sentence, one of the last sentences in that welcome to HuffPost Gay Voices section was, you wrote, quote, "I am thrilled by the raw possibilities inherent in the launching of HuffPost Gay Voices."
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel now?
You know,
it's been some months.
It's been 6 months.
There you go.
I'm really, really still excited. We're going to be adding on some more staff soon. Since we launched, we've been the number one LGBT news and culture site on the internet, which is really exciting for me. And I'm just really excited about the possibilities. We want to start doing more and more original reporting now that we'll have some more staff, and now that we kind of figured out our flow, we'll be able to do that and more interviews, and I think only good things up ahead, I hope.
What's one thing that you tried that you thought was going to be amazing and turned out you needed to tweak it?
Wow, that's a good question. I mean, I think in general, we never really know what's going to click and what's not. You know, we try and pick those stories, because the other thing people should know is that because we're on such a national sort of level, mm-hmm. we're not quite at the same place where a lot of other LGBT blogs might be. And so we're not going to cover every single story
right.
that happens. And there are amazing other places to get that kind of news. The Advocate does a great job. Toll
Absolutely.
Road does a great job.
Yeah.
But some stories that they might cover, we're not going to cover. So we spend a lot of time trying to then curate the 10 or 15 stories every day that we are going to cover. So I think sometimes maybe a story that we thought was going to click really well, it's just not as interesting to people as we thought it would be. And then sometimes a story that we had no idea was going to be that interesting, it goes viral and it has thousands of people liking it on Facebook. And that's still kind of a learning process to see
that,
you know, but, it's exciting. But the story about the Marine who came home and kissed his boyfriend, you must have seen that.
Oh, of course.
Right?
Yeah.
That was just such an exciting story. And we knew that people were going to like it, but we had no idea. I think that has like 10 or 20,000 likes on Facebook now at this point.
Oh, it's fantastic. I learned today that lesbians get engaged at hockey games.
They do.
Who knew?
You know? So I didn't know that, but I guess it kind of makes sense maybe, but, that's a great story we have up right now. I'm just really enjoying the ride and getting to present this to people. The other thing, too, is that we have so many straight readers. Because we are situated
yeah.
in the Huffington Post in America Online, we get to bring stories to people that they probably would never see, because a lot of straight people aren't going to click on The Advocate.
Right.
You know, that's not somewhere they're going to actually type into their browser. But because they might be on the Huffington Post and then they see a story about, you know, a trans activist who is maybe murdered in Mexico.
Right.
That's a way of reaching people that normally wouldn't be looking at that kind of content. So that maybe is the number one most exciting thing for me.
You're reaching a pretty wide audience.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
very exciting. Well, you do feature a lot of musicians, a lot of artists on there, which brings us to your musical selections for this week's episode.
Yeah.
This is the part of the show, Noah, where you tell our listening audience what some of your song selections say about Noah Michelson. It's a little self-analysis.
That's kind of, I didn't realize that's where we were going to go.
I know, it makes it more fun that way. This is my own form of glitter bombing.
Uh-huh, you just ambushed me.
No one's ever said that before. All right, so I'll set you up for a couple of these. Very low maintenance, but you know, a little self-analysis for our listening audience.
Sure.
One of my favorite songs, what does Kate Bush's Running Up That Hill say about Noah Michelson?
You know, I think it says maybe I'm a little bit moody and
okay.
a little melodramatic sometimes. I'm a sucker for kind of like romance, but like twisted romance, you know. I feel like I'm the one who's always pining after someone or you know, looking out the window when there's a rainstorm happening. Like, Kate Bush does that for me.
She does that.
Yeah.
Now,
love that.
It was not on my list of topics to talk about your romantic life, but we should say that perhaps there was a magazine that had 100 eligible bachelors.
They did. I was on there. That's true. I have to confess.
But then how do you explain that to perhaps someone you're dating?
Well, that's the thing.
You can only hope the sequence of events went in the right direction.
It's a funny story because I do have a boyfriend now, but that happened after I ended up on there. So I was safe, but you're right. That could have been kind of a sticky situation.
We're going to move on. Well, that's actually funny. It transitions nicely into Rihanna's We Found Love.
I mean, this is one of my top five favorite songs ever, which maybe is
really?
Stupid to say about a Rihanna song.
No, yeah. Go for it.
But I just love it. And I also love it because it's really uplifting, but also there's a really kind of depressive side to it too.
Yeah.
There's just something about it where, it makes me really happy, but I also feel like you could just be throwing yourself off a cliff at the same time while it's playing. So I like that kind of dichotomy about the song.
Can we do a little social commentary? Because I'm in a little bit of a quandary. It's not a quandary. I'm just kind of curious. You are now the third guest in a row to request that song, and I always honor our guests' musical selections. So yeah. We will indeed be playing Rihanna's We Found Love. Mm-hmm. But I'm trying to figure out why every single guest keeps requesting it. There's something going on in the zeitgeist.
I think because it's a great song. I mean, I also have to say, just to, you know, put it out there, I am troubled by the whole, her whole yeah. Chris Brown thing and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how I feel about Rihanna, but the song itself, I just think there's something about it. And Calvin Harris, who wrote it with her, or who wrote it for her, I'm not sure which, he's a genius, so it's just, it gets in your head and you can't get it out.
There you go. All right, I'm going to make you do one more. Because this is the one that I didn't know.
Oh, okay.
Phoenix.
Yeah.
Phoenix's song, Armistice.
They are, you know, they're from France, and they just, there's something hypnotic about them. There's something kind of also, I think, simultaneously really joyful, but also there's an undercurrent of distress of some kind, and that's what I like. I like my music kind of a little complicated, I think, and a little problematic, maybe.
You're a little angsty.
A little bit. I guess I never grew out of that. I think a lot of queer people are, you know, we put up with some stuff and we haven't forgotten that.
And I think NYU only serves to feed that.
I mean, I know.
So now where can folks go, Noah, to learn all about the cool things happening with the Huffington Post Gay Voices section?
Yeah. If they go to HuffingtonPost.com, they'll be able to find on the front page, usually you can find a Gay Voices story, but also it's HuffingtonPost.com/gay-voices.
Is there a way to get it off the more section? I want to see it on the main bar.
You know, I do too, but as of right now, no.
Okay.
It's sad. Yeah, I'm campaigning for that as well. But we just get more and more and more sections. You know, I feel like we're going to have HuffPost mall walkers soon, or HuffPost, you know, plant caretakers. And so
we got to go for big readership. It could be HuffPost NYU debt would really get a lot of folks listening.
I could handle both of those.
To what degree do we think that this week's episode of This Show Is So Gay will get Gay Voices on the main masthead there?
I'm not hopeful, but I like that idea. I like your optimism.
I'm trying.
We could be, you know, we'd be a good kind of team together because you seem really optimistic and I'm kind of pessimistic.
You know, it was moving out of New York. It just came back in a rush. But when I visit, it comes roaring back. So
right.
I'm there. Well, I have to say it's one of the sources that we go to every week to check out what's going on with Gay Voices. It's such an important resource for the entire LGBT community. And I'm so gratified that you highlighted that the straight community is going there, because you see that not just in what's being posted, but in the comment section.
Yeah.
And it provides a meeting place for folks to talk about these issues. And it's just a great thing that you're doing over there.
Thanks, Ken. I really appreciate that. And yeah, it's a lot of fun. And I think we're really doing it. So I'm happy about it.
And you're going to keep going?
We're going to keep going. There's no stopping us.
And what do I say when the people write in and say, but wait, is he still a bachelor?
He's not. But you know how it goes. I probably will be in like 3 months. So.
We'll edit that part out. Noah Michelson, an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Please keep doing what you're doing.
Thanks, Ken. I'll talk to you soon.
All the best.
All right. Bye.
Bye. This is wasted. folks, and we are back. And welcome to our brand new listeners this week. We're happy to have you aboard this Rainbow Cruise O-Talk. So as you old-time fans know, this show, So Gay, is all about righting the wrongs of the world with our flaming sword of justice. Just go with it. But what happens when we here on this show, So Gay, commit an injustice ourselves? Case in point, our 150th show a few months back. It was an ambitious venture as we featured five of our favorite guests over the years, and all five were amazing, but only four made it out of the production room because one of the interviews got all kinds of messed up. That fifth segment featured the talented and stunning Michelle Bonilla, who appeared for more than a decade on my favorite documentary, ER. It's real, trust me. And she brought along Matt Crabtree, with whom she was working on a project, which we'll tell you about in a few. So to right this injustice, we gave a special shout out to Michelle Bonilla and Michael Crabtree. Now, there's something special about trying to make up an error to someone by giving them a shout-out and then messing up their name. So to correct that second injustice, we're handing him the keys to the show. You ready to go, Matt?
I am ready to go.
Let me introduce you. Having that wasn't even the introduction, Matt. There's more. I know, it's like you got to just hang out for a while. Having survived a four-year stint at a Southern Baptist University in North Carolina, which we'll talk about, with a degree in biology and pre-med, and a brief stint at the Medical College of Virginia, Matt Crabtree was lured by the forces of nature to accept a national touring gig in She Loves Me, which got him to New York City. After a few years in the city performing off-Broadway, storefronts all over the place, Matt did the European tour of West Side Story as Chino and returned to find a place at the legendary Steppenwolf Theater Company School at Steppenwolf in Chicago. He then arrived in L.A. and was booked on his first job on the last episode of Diagnosis Murder. Further work included spots on Will and Grace, Bones, NCIS, Grey's Anatomy, Greek, and so many more. Matt, that's Matt Crabtree. Welcome to This Show Is So Gay.
Oh, I thought you were calling for a Michael Crab.
Is he available?
He is, hopefully.
That would be like the worst drag alter ego you could have. It's Matt and Michael Crabtree. It's not even clever.
No, I think my drag name is actually Bacon Knox.
Nice.
It's like your first pet's name and the street you grew up on. I think that's what it is, right?
Your first pet's name was Bacon?
Bacon. Bacon the dog.
Oh.
And he shot nine times.
Oh.
His entire life and never died until he got hit by the car that hit him for the fifth time. He finally died.
That's a lovely tale to tell the kids, Matt. Well, we have so much to talk about. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Because we're doing a little learning annex tonight. We covered journalism earlier for all of our listeners who want to get into the journalism field. And I'm tempted to have you do the learning annex for how to be an actor. But your path is a little bit untraditional, would we say?
It is. It's completely untraditional.
Tell us.
Well, when I went off to college the first time, I actually went off to get a real degree in medicine. Pharmacy to begin with, down at Campbell University in North Carolina, but doing theater on the side. I always wanted to be an actor ever since my senior year of high school, but I wanted to do that full time, but have my medical career as my backup.
Okay.
So that was my reasoning in my head for everything that I was doing, because at the same time you wanted to please your parents when you're young.
Right.
You're like, yes, I have to become a pharmacist so I can get my family free drugs. That was kind of what they wanted. Out of the entire deal. And so I just continued to...
They're a practical bunch, the Crabtrees.
The Crabtrees are a practical bunch.
Okay.
They're still all in North Carolina, so they get anything that, they get anything they want anytime they want. So it's, especially for me, we're a very passive-aggressive group.
Nice.
Yeah. So you don't have to get that if you don't want to. I mean, I'll sit here at home by myself, but, I don't need it. But thank you. Thank you for thinking of it.
If I pass out, I pass out.
If you come home and I'm dead on the floor, don't worry about it. Just step over my body and just make sure you get the cash that's in the closet.
There's a clean sheet in the drawer. Just drape that over. Just drape.
Just put it over. So people don't have to see my dead, lifeless body because my son doesn't love me. Yeah.
Good time. So the doctor was the backup plan.
Doctor was the backup plan, and I ended up going to the Medical College of Virginia to get my master's in nursing, actually. I mean, I started off in pharmacies, in the pre-pharmacy program at Campbell, and didn't really like the people I would have been in school with, plus, it hit this and that. So I switched over to pre-med and biology.
Okay.
And got my BS there. And then after I graduated, I didn't really have any plans, so I applied to the nursing school in Richmond. And after 3 months of work there, studying there, I got a call to go on the road with a national tour of She Loves Me, which was one of my favorite musicals of all time.
I've
done it a couple times already. And so I got cast as one of the understudies and the dance captain of the show and traveled for 9 months. It was my first really professionally paid gig. And that landed me in New York, and I just never went back.
Favorite place to play in New York?
Favorite place to play in New York?
Perform. I should say perform, not play.
You know what? I performed some in New York, but most of my stuff was outside of New York City. One of my favorite places that I actually performed was in a storefront.
Nice.
It was an old converted storefront, and then it was down in Soho somewhere. I have no idea. It was such a long time ago. And that intro you did earlier, you did some good research on that.
Yes.
You Googled the not a Crabtree.
I'm like, I can't find anything on Michael Crabtree. I'll just read the Matt Crabtree one, and that'll work.
And just pretend it's him.
And we're good at that here. We're good at that here. And then finally you land in L.A.
I landed in L.A. in 2001.
How wide-eyed were you?
Yeah, I was completely wide-eyed. I just got kind of tired of New York City. Not tired of New York City. I got tired of the musical theater business in New York City for me. And then I just said, you know what? I'm going to move to L.A. because I want to do television and film. And there were some in New York, but I wanted a clean start. I wanted a clean slate. So I hopped on a plane. My airfare was $198.
Okay.
Direct flight on Delta. I packed a suitcase and came out and ended up in an apartment within 2 days. And so that kind of started my entire L.A. jaunt.
Now, I have read many an interview with Dick Van Dyke, and people often ask him, well, why did Diagnosis Murder end? We really like that show. And he always has these cryptic comments about a special guest on the last show and how he feels connected to the demise of the show.
Yeah, it was Matt Crabtree.
Yeah, well, he doesn't come out and say it, but...
Yeah, it's what happened.
Okay. Do you want to address that? Do you want to just let it fester?
I'm going to let it fester a little bit. I did see him at the Screen Actors Guild Awards, and we had a little conversation about it. And I was like, Mr. Van Dyke, you meant so much to me over the years watching your work, and I'm so glad I was able to come on your last show and kill it.
There you go. There you go. It's a resume builder.
He fell down the steps at the SAG Awards as one of his bits, and everyone thought he had actually fallen down the steps. And he's 80. I would like he's going to break a hip, but he's actually very, very sturdy.
He's a very sturdy guy.
Very sturdy guy.
I would imagine you called him Mr. Van Dyke, but there's no way that you called Barry Van Dyke Mr. Van Dyke as well.
No, I called him B.
Of course you did.
Yeah.
So now, and then people are always looking for advice how to get into character. So I picked one of your most notable roles, and I wanted to talk about your process. So talk to everybody, talk to our listening audience, how you got into character to play Bashful the Dwarf.
Aww. I did Bashful at the Walt Disney Concert Hall last year as we did a concert reading of the original. It was the original score and the original everything with the Hollywood Bowl Orchestra and John Montieri directing. Conducting and Jeff Lee directing. Bashful, you know, it's just me. You know, I just went deep inside.
Okay.
I was a very shy kid growing up, so I tapped into that.
When did that wear off?
I'm still shy.
Is that right?
Yeah.
So of the dwarfs, that's the one that you would have chosen to play? You feel that's the one most consistent with your personality?
That's the dwarf that's the one that I related to the most.
Okay.
There's not an angry dwarf, so I went with a... Can we say dwarf? Is it little people? But no, it's Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. I don't want to like offend anyone out there.
I admire your desire to be PC on the show. Is So Gay, though. It's really appreciated by...
On the gay show.
It's a family gay show. It's a family gay show. So now, one of your fellow actors, Kirk Cameron, who I would imagine you guys chat all the time.
We go to the same church.
Because... I don't think that's true.
You're right.
I don't think that's true. But folks knew that we were...
rumors, though.
Yeah, yes, because so many rumors trace back to the show Is So Gay, let me tell you. The day that we break news, that'll be our last show. That'll be our what we call the Matt Crabtree diagnosis murder moment.
This is probably your last show. I'm throwing it out there. You have Huff Poe and you have Crabtree, and that's it.
Have you ended other gigs? Have you noticed other things that you've ended?
Well, I did the last season of Will and Grace.
Okay.
I did two episodes on the last season of Will and Grace, so that kind of killed that. I think I did the last season of The District.
Okay.
I think I did the last season. Well, Grey's Anatomy is still on, which is good.
And yes.
It lasted a few more years after me. They were they jumped the shark though with me. Wow, this is like I need to stop talking about this because people are going to stop hiring me.
I kind of don't even want you on the show anymore, to be honest with you.
Luckily, I just worked on Monday, so that was fun.
I had such a better time with Mike Crabtree. But yes, folks knew that we were going to have an actor on today's show, and so someone wrote in and said, get his take on Kirk Cameron. Should actors really be disclosing their social views?
Should they? You know what? This business, it's all about publicity. It's all about image. And, you know, everyone has the right to their opinion, you know, free speech, do whatever you want. But there are many great actors out there that actually have their own personal life that no one really knows about. And I admire those people. A lot of people will get in front of the cameras and talk about their personal life.
Right.
Or just for that reason, just for notoriety and just to become, you know, famous in some little small circles. As for me, I don't really care to do that. I mean, I'll stand up and speak my mind when I need to, but I don't do it for any kind of political or any kind of promotional purposes, I guess you could say. Like, I don't go out there and I don't want to be Kim Kardashian. I don't want to be all these other people. I just like to be who I am and do my work because I'm an actor first and foremost. I'm not a celebrity. And I think he went through celebrity, and since he was a celebrity and teen idol, that he's in a different place, like he's
right.
In a different mindset. And so in regards to Kirk, you know, I don't believe what he says, but at the same time, he has the right to say it.
She'll say something to him in church on Sunday, I would assume.
Yeah, well, yes. I'm like, get up off the knees. Get up. Stop praying.
Family show.
Well, you kneel to pray. That's all I'm saying.
I'm a gay Jew from Jersey. There's not a lot of kneeling. We just press those pants. So that's not, we don't go there with that. It's a lot of standing. I'm not saying it's a lot of standing going on, but not so much with the kneeling.
And a lot of bowing a lot.
Tons.
Tons of bowing.
I don't even do it in temple. I just do it constantly. Now, again, you mentioned that you were on Will and Grace. That had to have been an incredible experience.
It was amazing. I went on as the last season as Jack's stage manager for his talk show. So anytime they were at Jack Talk, they brought me back. And after I did the first episode, I read in the trades that Britney Spears was going to do an episode. So I was on the phone immediately to my agents and managers going, call casting.
Get on it.
Bring me back. And they did. And everyone was lovely. Shelley Morrison, who played Rosario, was even lovelier because she would come out. Will and Grace was known to have the best craft service of any
really?
Show out there. The food was amazing, and she came up to me on my first day and said, "Okay, when we break for dinner, don't eat. Eat just a little bit. Get a box for later because you will eat and you will crash."
Nice.
Because it's a long night when you tape.
Oh, I bet.
A multi-camera show. The audience themselves arrive at 5, and depending on how smoothly the show goes, you know, you may not be out till 11. So or you could be out at 8, depending on if Crabtree's on the show.
Right. And then the executives show up, and it's really a mess from there, which I almost feel like we shouldn't have Michelle Bonilla listen to this because I don't want to damage your partnership. But you do.
Know what? It's not going to. They're in the other room at now writing.
Oh, is that right?
We're polishing up our full season that we're shooting at the end of April.
But full season of what? Our listeners ask.
Full season of a new comedic web series called Failing Upwards. Unemployment has its perks.
Give us a spiel.
Well, it is a little Arrested Development meets Reality Bites. And it's about four unemployed people that do anything to get a job.
Okay.
What it is they fall into jobs they're not qualified to do, and they end up doing them successfully. So if you think about it, you know, I was a temp for many, many years, and I look at my bosses going, how do you get this job? You are a moron. And it's true. People fail upwards in this business. You get lucky and you're not qualified to do it, but for some reason you pull it off. So you think, are they really not smart at their jobs, or are they really smart for keeping it?
Do you see how that, because you said that to Dick Van Dyke, it didn't actually help the experience there?
No, it didn't.
No. Okay.
Mr. VD didn't like it.
He did not. So where are we in the process? They're in the other room writing.
They're in my living room writing.
Nice.
And I'm in the office here. And so I left them. I said, you have to get to work. Finish these things. As an executive producer, co-creator, I get to crack the whip.
Nice. I would be nervous to do that with Michelle Bonilla. She's a paramedic.
She is a paramedic, but she's not a paramedic in this show.
Okay,
it's the whole genesis of the entire project. We, you know, as actors, we're pretty much cast as the same thing over and over again. That's how people see you until you get your big break, and then you can branch out when you have money, and you can then you can start saying no to things.
Right,
and you can start being more creative and creating your own, you know, material. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is one of my favorite actors.
You love him.
And of course, you know, he got his start on, you know, Third Rock from the Sun, and, you know, he made his money there, and he was able to go off and do these independent projects that he really felt passionate about. And he was able to do that for that reason. So we decided to create our own project, and it's all characters we've never played before. It's really good because we have an L, we have a G, we have a B. We don't have a T in our show.
Okay.
But we have a straight woman. So we have an LGB straight woman.
Okay.
In our show. We would like to have a little tea at some point, but, you never know.
You never know. There is a fundraising element to this whole venture, is there not?
It did. Yes, we did an Indiegogo campaign in regards to our, towards our pre-production, and that just ended, but we are still accepting donations at our website, which is failingupwardstheseries.com.
Nice.
You can always donate there. There's a little PayPal button, and we're going to add certain perks. Like, we're going to add the perks that we had for Indiegogo to our PayPal also, which includes, you know, if you donate a certain amount, you get merchandise. You get, if you donate $5,000, we will come and do a task for you here
oh, nice.
In California, film it, and have it be part of our next season.
Okay.
$10,000, we will go anywhere in the country and shoot it, write you into the show, and have that be one of our episodes for next season. So, you know, I'm just saying, those listeners with really deep pockets, donate.
At what funding level can you get Michelle Bonilla to come resuscitate you?
She resuscitates me every day.
Oh, look at that. You don't even have to give.
No, I don't. She's a giver.
She's a giver. Now, what makes this work? Because, you know, a lot of people like to work by themselves, and they don't much appreciate working with other folks because different styles, different energies. What makes this partnership work with you all?
I think we complement each other. We're very both task-oriented people, and I think we're a little both on the OCD side. I know I am, so I like to make sure everything's in place before I continue. So we actually say, this is what we need to get done. Who can better do this? So we're able to divvy up the task of, okay, we have to get our Writers Guild signatory, our Directors Guild signatory, our Screen Actors Guild. So I took the SAG, she took the WGA, she took the DGA, and then I'm working to get the crew together. So we complement each other very well, and we have two additional writers on the show. And who just add even more to that. And
great.
The episodes are going to be so funny. Everyone's going to love them. We do have just a little teaser up on the website just to give a little introduction to the show. We haven't shot any episodes yet, so people are wanting more content. And we're like, you have to wait.
You got to be patient.
End of April. Just wait, my friends.
Now, my assumption is if someone did want to donate $10,000, you don't really care if they call you Matt or Mike.
They can, just as long as they call me, I don't care.
There you go. Now, what part can this show Is So Gay play in this venture? I'm not going to lie, I'm obsessed with Michelle Bonilla.
Oh, you are?
A little bit.
A lot of people are obsessed with Michelle Bonilla, especially after her film came out last year.
Oh, gosh.
People got even more obsessed with Michelle Bonilla.
Yes.
What part can this...
I would assume that there are any number of writing sessions where you have to say, Michelle, I need you to focus right now. We're not talking about a small, independent Vermont gay radio show.
I do. I have to say that to her a lot. And she gets disappointed.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know, buck up.
As naturally she would.
Yeah, she would. She does naturally. And she's actually really funny. Like, you know, you see her work, you see her crying in shows, you see her being the, you know, the mom here, but she's actually really funny.
Love her. Love her. Yeah. All right, so what's next? So you guys are, you're putting stuff together. What is the next date we should be looking out for?
Next date you should be looking out for will be the end of May.
Okay.
End of May, we're looking to launch the series. And depending on how it's received, how many views we get, how many people like it, we have a lot of we've got some meetings set up to pitch it as a television show, which we've expanded it also. We have the capability of creating a half-hour TV series out of it. And so we're going to be doing a lot of pitching, and hopefully someone's going to buy it. And then you'll see us not just on your little tiny computer screen, unless you have a large screen.
Right.
But actually on the TV.
This is very exciting.
It is. It's very. We're so super excited about it. We're locking down locations. We're getting some great guest cast coming in.
Yeah. I mean, there are any number of people, we've had some on the show, who are working on projects, and sure, they're into them, but you don't really feel the energy around it. And when you guys were on the 150th show, I swear it happened, even though no one can hear it. It's real. It happened. There's such a palpable energy that you folks have around this project that there's no question that when people hear you talking about it, gosh, we just want to see it. So that's so exciting just to even witness, and much less, let's check out the product when it gets here.
Yes, Failing Upwards, the series, is going to be pretty spectacular.
Very exciting, very exciting. So in case someone somehow missed the website.
I believe it's www.failingupwardstheseries.com.
Nice. Do you feel we have corrected the injustice?
Well, if for some reason you still think I am Michael Crabtree, you should go to mattcrabtree.com. And just see all my stuff.
That would do it. That would do it.
Like us on Facebook, because that's what it's all about nowadays. It's like, how many likes do you have on Facebook? How many Twitter followers do you have? That's what a lot of production companies are looking for, because they want built-in fan bases so they don't have to work as hard.
I know this isn't perhaps the most nuanced question I've ever asked on this show, but how do you feel about that? It just seems to be such a bizarre measure.
It is. It's a bizarre measure, but people still swear by it.
Okay.
And that's how the industry is going. That's how the business is going. It's going to the new social media. It's going to the phones now. It's, you know, it's moving away from cable. It's moving away from television. And it's all becoming a lot more accessible to everyone. And people like to always be updated. So we've got our Twitter handle at failing_upwards, and which is also on the website, failingupwardstheseries.com. Was that enough? Did I give enough there?
You're doing fine. You're doing good. Fine. I'm just really upset that I need to turn my Nielsen box into a planter, because it apparently has no relevance anymore.
It has no relevance anymore.
It's very depressing.
Well, you know what? It's interesting. It still does. It does have a lot of relevance, because people, you know, they still use that, because they still have the ratings and things, because I don't know if they've actually figured out exactly how to capture how many people watch a television show or watch it in its entirety, or
right. When
do they tune out. So I'm sure the technology is there, and they're probably using it and not telling us.
Yeah.
But who knows?
All right. I won't turn it into a planter yet. Okay. Now, to complete the circle, we're going to even let you do something that we don't really let any guest do, and that's do the closing line of the show with us. Okay? Your key words, very easy to remember, and you'll know exactly when to say them. Your key words are so gay. Okay.
All right.
So hold on one second. Hey, okay. Folks, thanks for checking out this week's show. A huge thanks to Matt Crabtree. What a pleasure having you on, Matt.
It was a pleasure. Thank you for having me back on.
And of course, yes, I'm just pretending it didn't happen the first time. In some ways, it makes me feel better. And of course, our thanks to Noah Michelson from the Huffington Post Gay Voices section, and to Michelle Bonilla, whose spirit just runs all the way through the show, as it does every show. Okay, now I'm getting a little scary.
I feel her now.
I bet you do in so many ways. Get out there, folks. Go do some incredible, incredible things. Use your voice to make a difference. That's what we want you to do. And while you're doing all those incredible things, remember, why be gay when you can be so gay? There you go.
It doesn't hurt me, yeah, yeah. makes you.